Blog Talk Radio.
This is the RF Radio Show with OJ and Gritfish.
Good evening. It's 6:30 p.m. Eastern Time, and you're listening to Radio RF, the best radio show on ArtlitusForums.com. So tonight, we will be having a panel discussion with our members, GSA and Orbit. We'll be discussing globalization, global governance, and cultural diversity.
We are actually supposed to have a third caller, and that was FTNZ, and she was supposed to call in from New Zealand, but we're running into technical issues having people call in from New Zealand. Apparently, you can call in via Skype without buying credits, and you can't call in via phone because of international rates. I actually have Verizon, and I have an unlimited plan, and I don't get international rates, so it didn't even faze me to like worry about that. So I can just call whoever with the plan I have. They get me on the data though.
Well, it is the way of the future. Someday we'll all just be able to call everywhere, anytime, and it won't cost, you know.
Yeah, it's pretty close.
It'll be that way, too, you know.
So if anyone has any suggestions on how someone international can call into the show is, I guess, a landline. So if there's a way that someone can call in. And again, that call-in number is 646-200-4733. And, feel free to call in, ask us questions, our guest questions, if you have a suggestion for what we can do to have international callers, please let us know. Anyways, thank you. And we do have music and a painting again today. And painting is, again, that's by Sunstone. And we have a song submitted by someone who is remaining anonymous. So we look forward to those things. And again, if you have music or art you want to submit, please send it to Dreadfish or into OJ, and we will put it on the show. It's always if you write short stories or poetry, we would also allow you to come on the show and read that. You know, if you have ideas for segments that you'd like to talk about every episode, every other episode, once a month, you know, whatever, you can pre-record a segment and send it to us. And we're also accepting, you know, show ideas, interview ideas, just stuff you want Dreadfish and I to talk about, and that kind of stuff. So if you have anything you'd like to suggest or share with us, that'd be great. Thank you.
Any kind of input is always welcome. Whatever we can do to improve the show for us and for you. It's always more fun whenever we're doing a good job. You know, you get to feel good about something you do. That's cool. So let us know, even if it is to tell us that we're doing a terrible job, so then we know what we can fix.
I will have to say, I think last episode was the highest live views we got yet, and we had 20 live views on Thursday's episode. Now, that Monday's episode, for some reason, the stats of people who listened live didn't appear. So if you called in live last episode and you're listening to this now, can you make a comment underneath this episode? You may have to make an account to do that, but you can also comment with Facebook and follow us that way, or if you do end up making an account to comment, you can then follow us that way, and that would help us, as well as, you know, if you want to share this on Facebook or Twitter or Instagram or, you know, whatever, you know, social media things people are using nowadays. I don't know. I can't keep up. I was like 3 years late to using Facebook.
Yeah, I finally got seduced into using Facebook at last. I was thinking about that just the other day, actually. I remember whenever I was, I don't know how old I was a teenager, though. And, you know, MySpace was a thing. And my friend, she was saying, well, why don't you get a MySpace account? I was like, well, what's MySpace? And she says, it's your own website. And I'm like, but, you know, if I want my own website, I can just make my own website. You know, there are websites for that. And I just didn't even understand it. Looking back, it's just so funny to me. You know, I didn't understand the appeal of having my own page. And now I use Facebook, but not so much for having my own page. it really is good for keeping in touch with a lot of people in one place. But it's really funny. It's a big unexpected shift in the way we've used technology in just the past, you know, not even 10 years.
Yeah, I mean, isn't there some type of law about that?
Oh, the progression of technology?
Yeah.
Oh, I know there is some kind of law, but I'm not sure if it relates to that or not.
Fair enough. Anyways, we forgot to mention before, we don't have any segments today. Lewis Matt Miller went camping, so he's camping, and we wish that he has a very fun camping trip. And I imagine that camping in Australia is significantly more scary than camping in America. You know, my wife wrote about the dingoes, but I was just reading about this plant that, like, if you touch it, you'll itch for basically years. That sounds terrible. And it's like, some, if you fall in it, it's like agonizing pain. Apparently, like, Australia just wants to kill you. And I think he's pretty brave for going camping out there.
Yeah, Australia is the continent where everything can kill you if it wants to.
Except.
But actually.
They have giant walking sticks. Well, they have like two giant walking sticks.
Can kill you yet. But actually, I
don't think it's native. I think it lives near Australia. But I don't think it's actually from Australia. The walking lobster, or tree lobster, I was reading something about it on the internet. That apparently, like, they were nearly extinct. And then they found some on this, like, island. And then they were, like, bred in the zoo in Australia, and now they're looking for, like, a place to release them or something.
That's interesting. If it's what I'm looking at now, it looks like a huge cricket or something.
It's longer than
yeah,
a cricket.
Wild, wildlife absolutely fascinates me. I love all that kind of stuff. Just the other day I was looking at, you know, different monkeys and that sort of thing. Random fact, the largest monkey in the world is, the word just went away, mandrill. That's what it is. And it's related to the baboon. The mandrill is the one we often think of when we think of a baboon that has the blue and the red on its snout and that sort of thing. But they are very large. And if I remember right, they can get to about 110 pounds or something like that.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it's very
right.
Cool.
Radio R brings you random facts about animals. And if you'd like to pick the animal we feature next week, please call 646-200-4733. Comment underneath the episode. Comment on one of our threads. Did we post a link to this on our thread? We should do that. Someone do that? Someone doing that yet? I'm going to assume someone's doing that.
All right.
Thank you, whoever did that. So, again, Dred already said tonight's episode is about globalization, global governance, their effects on cultural diversity and the importance of cultural diversity. Now, I was going to introduce today's show, pointing out that we have someone calling in from New Zealand, and that's about as international as it can get. We're doing a radio show in different corners of the world. But I suppose I'll just have to settle for the fact that people listen to this internationally, and my friends on RF are people I know all over the world. And I mean, that's something that is globalization. But you can also look at globalization from an economic standpoint, and, you know, going to Walmart, this is a really fun game to play, find the American product. And count how many countries you find a product from before you get to an American product. And see how very few American products there are there, but how many different international products there are. I think last time I played, I got to 15 countries before I found a USA product in Walmart. And this year, you have, again, more globalization. Now, I don't want to get too much into the idea of global governance right now because it's kind of more of the hot-button topic, I suppose, than some of the other ones. You know, people get a little antsy about that. And before we do get into that topic, I just want to say we'll be talking about tonight, I don't think anyone is referring to the, you know, the conspiracy theory, one world government, you know, Illuminati kind of thing, you know? That's not where we're coming from. That's not what I'm talking about. And I assume that's not what other people are talking about. And I think we'll each get into what we are thinking about when we do that. And I look forward to hearing thoughts. But again, just know we're not doing the whole Illuminati conspiracy. They're trying to make it happen kind of thing. And then, again, people worry about globalization and its impact on cultural diversity, and especially global governance and its impact on cultural diversity. And before I have Dre give his comments on that, I have like one more thing to say about global governance. I would support it if it followed something similar to the American Constitution, and I suggest maybe that we kind of follow the whole state right thing and apply that to the way that you do a global governance. So different regions would be states, so countries would become states, come into nation states now, and they would have some semi-autonomous rule with just basic human rights and economics being, I suppose, controlled by like the larger collection of everything. And that's what I'm going from when I talk about this topic. Anyways, Dred, what are your thoughts on tonight's topic?
I have a lot of thoughts on globalization. Obviously, we have a lot of that, like you're already talking about. I was a little bit disappointed we weren't talking about the Illuminati. I kind of thought that that was the point. But, you know, it's okay. I'll adapt. But, you know, since we're talking more literal here, personally, I'm a little bit ambivalent about global governance because I already think that in the case of the United States, the federal government has a little bit too much power. I feel like when it comes to governing people and having communities and societies, smaller scale is better. And I don't know why. I haven't thought about it enough to really give you really solid reasons why. But things just seem to work better on smaller scales. So I feel like collections of smaller communities of governance is better than having one large system of governance. But it could work if it's done like a tree going down with the highest form of government really only covering very basic things. In the case of global governance, I'm thinking human rights and the management of natural resources as being the highest form of governance. But I would think that that's basically the most that that should have power over.
It sounds like you and I have the same thoughts on this. I would actually add space exploration and colonization and the advancement of science onto that list. But beyond that, basically we're on the same page. So that should be interesting. So I wanted to explain tonight's format. And we're going to do something a little bit different than usual. So inside on our end, on the end of the host, there's a switchboard that I see, and I can mute people, I can have people talk, and I can bring people into a private room to talk without being heard on the radio show. And tonight, I may be really taking advantage of that feature by having everyone on mute, and then I'll introduce the topic, I'll bring on speaker, give them a few minutes, they'll finish, move on to the next speaker, and kind of just cycle through this way. This way, everyone has a chance to talk on each topic, and I'm going to try to do my best to keep my eye on the clock, so I probably should have gotten like an egg timer would be perfect. Do you have an egg timer? Mm-hmm. No, we don't have an egg timer, so I'm just going to watch the time on my computer, and that should help. So I suppose the first thing we should do is global governance. And or not global, we're not getting to that one yet. I'm sorry. I was looking at Scott. We should do just the idea of globalization and act. I suppose I don't really see anyone who could be against it. I mean, I suppose there are people who can and are, but I'm not really expecting to run into it too much because, again, as you said, we're on, I mean, the very community we belong to is, you know, a symptom or you exist because of globalization. And there's a lot of good things about globalization. It brings everyone closer together and it manages, it kind of connects the whole world. And I mean, that's one of the beautiful things about RL. So, both of you here on GSA, and you just changed your name recently, GSA. Before we get into tonight's topic, would you like to see why you shortened your name to just GSA? You were a GSA speaker.
Yeah. I was a little bit more, I just thought that GSA was easier to manage, and, you know, I stopped looking, so that was why. Plus, less misleading.
Fair enough. Okay, so what are your thoughts on globalization?
Well, I see globalization as something that has pretty much existed since probably before, you know, the dawn of modern civilization. I mean, globalization really refers to trade and migration patterns and dissemination of ideas. And those things have been going on for thousands of years, at least, tens of thousands. With globalization today, I think that what we're talking about is usually the set of kind of international financial arrangements, including financial institutions like the IMF and the World Bank. We're talking about the growth of mass communications technology, which is what makes things like RF possible. And we're talking about a kind of more even and widely dispersed access to global citizenry. So in other words, you know, now it's much easier for people to interact with people who live halfway across the world. And it's really a function of changes in technology. But there's also a political component to it as well, you know. So we see that one of the reasons that globalization is controversial is because there are there's much greater support for free trade agreements. There's a greater willingness to oppose restrictions on international trade. And I think that those are the kind of things that has made globalization and, to a certain extent, global governance fairly controversial. But I see it as something that's kind of always existed, and it's just a question of how intense it's been at various points in time.
Okay. What you say makes a lot of sense, especially about the historical aspect of how it's not really a new phenomenon. If you even look at, the Eurozone versus, a past empire, it's all kind of the same idea. So I'm going to bring on Orbit now, and this is Orbit's second time, unless you want to count her other two times when she played music on her show being on. So thank you for calling in again, Orbit.
Hi. Glad to be
here.
Thanks for having me.
Did you have a reaction to what GSA said?
Well, I see things, I think, from more of being an American, I tend to think about how it affects me as an American. And a few things have happened. The biggest thing that's going on in the last 30 years in America is the decline of the middle class. And I think that's in part due to globalization. Domestically, the trade unions were attacked and weakened with all different kinds of laws that I can discuss, not really the topic. But the other thing that happened was starting with NAFTA and the later trade agreements and the multinationalization of corporations. A corporation no longer has to be and have its operations in the United States in order to make profits off of the U.S. market. And when companies started moving their factories overseas and moving their assembly overseas, like to China, the factories to Mexico, outsourcing call center jobs to India, you know, as this started happening, that takes jobs away from the American economy. And it's not a case of we had to do this to keep competing. It's a case of during the time of highest profits, how can we get more? And so the economic equation doesn't work for me. And the middle class, because the jobs have gone, no one can afford to buy the goods that stimulate the economy. And people buying goods is what stimulates the economy and what gives you a middle class. So my view of it is a little more, a little less optimistic.
Okay, actually, I hadn't considered that from an American perspective. I mean, I so often just prefer to think of myself. I mean, people ask me when I am in America. I'm like, I'm an American. I don't really like the whole, ethnicity. I'm an Italian American. I'm an Irish American. Like, I don't really see the value in that. So I tend to answer American, and I definitely see myself as an American. But overall, I tend to, look at things from a more global perspective, and I like the idea of seeing myself as a global citizen, but I failed to consider that. But you make a very good point. I mean, when I talk about American politics, one of the first complaints I have is the globalization of our economy. I mean, we outsource all these jobs, and then we have no middle class. So, Dredd, what did you think about that?
I also do agree with the downsides of corporations being able to go overseas where they pay lower costs on certain things and then being able to make the money of selling it in the United States where it costs more than it does in other countries to buy things. an example is I'm from the southern Atlantic states here, and one of the big industries down here were cotton mills and textile mills, and those used to be all over the place. Anybody who wanted to get a job would just go to a mill, and they could start working. And just within the past 10 to 15 years, you know, all of those were just moved overseas because of cheaper labor. And so tons of people were out of work, and now there are so many abandoned mills all over the area here. And so obviously that's a downside. In the case of the United States, too few things are made in the United States. I do think that trade is very good. International trade is very good. The diversity of any kind of system usually works to its advantage. So I don't mean to block us off entirely, but in the case of things like this, it's a negative.
Okay, it's a reasonable way to look at that. And I think there's another way we can address this particular point. And it goes kind of with what we were saying before about globalization's impact on cultural diversity. You can see that, I mean, especially with the spread of, like, McDonald's and Disneyland and stuff like that. You know, like, there's McDonald's in how many countries now? That's somewhat a spreading of the American culture, I suppose. And one I wish that wasn't being spread. But that's a whole different ballpark. So what do you think, GSA? Do you see a connection between globalization and how does it impact on cultural diversity? Is it harmful? Is it beneficial?
Well, I would say that overall it's actually, I mean, I think it's relatively neutral. I don't think that the globalization itself says much about that. Again, I don't define globalization in the same way, looking solely at what happened after World War II. But, you know, you talk about things like McDonaldization or the spread of American culture, and I think that one thing that we need to keep in mind, you know, the reason that, I mean, you mentioned your own ethnic background, mine somewhat similar, and, you know, for all the McDonald's that have spread, the U.S. is pretty much a product of globalization as well. I mean, it's a nation that is largely composed of immigrant groups. There's a lot of cultural diversity that swirls in as a result of immigration, as a result of trade. So I think of it as being more neutral or positive when it comes to, you know, the kind of exchange of cultural diversity. One thing that, you know, a culture that doesn't have much trade or is relatively insular is also usually relatively homogenous. Now, that's not the standard anymore. You know, the United States, I don't think, is any more of an outlier. I think that you see that diversity is the norm in a lot of areas of the world. But I also think that it's important to kind of separate out the effects of things like immigration and trade from some of the kind of political political regulations that involved in globalization. So, for example, I agree that there's been an attack on the middle class. I agree that there's been, you know, a large growth of multinational corporations, but that's a form that globalization took for historical reasons, for political reasons. It's not the form that it has to take. So that's my only, you know, it's a question of, for me, you have a certain level of technology that creates a certain amount of trade, creates a certain amount of exchange of ideas and goods, and the issue is how do you make that more equitable? How do you make it consistent with human rights norms? And how do you do it in a way that respects, to the extent that's possible, feasible, cultural diversity?
Okay, so you kind of sound like when I felt the need to warn people that we're not talking about the, you know, one world order, you know, Illuminati conspiracy, that it's not really set in stone. Like, you could, there's many different ways globalization can happen. And I think that's important for everyone to remember while we listen to this episode. Now, Dreadfish, I believe you had a comment on what you were saying?
Yes, and I do also agree that, for the most part, it's neutral. Most things are neutral in and of themselves. It depends on how you implement it. But another example of shipping jobs overseas, I remember my mom once worked with a nurse from India. You know, her family had immigrated to America a long time ago. And she told my mom once that, you know, they came over here for the jobs, and now all the jobs have gone back over to India because all the companies are outsourcing. So it's just another example of that sort of thing. You know, people used to come to the U.S. for jobs, and in this case, it was kind of humorous the way she presented it too. You know, they came from India to get jobs in America. Now America's sending all the jobs back to India, you know, with customer service and that sort of thing.
Reminds me of a funny story I had actually read like a couple years ago, where a call center was actually outsourcing jobs to America because Americans were getting pissed to get call someone who, you know, spoke non-native English. So they already started outsourcing jobs. It was just one company, but it was kind of a humorously written article on that. Anyways, Orbit, what do you think? Do you think that globalization and either the points we discussed affect on cultural diversity?
Well, there's a difference between cultural diversity, which is everybody loves diversity, but there's a difference between diversity and domination or hegemony. And a lot of local cultures are being disappeared by this sort of dominant American culture. I think of two movements. Both around food, around something as mundane as food. In Italy, there's something called the slow food movement, which emphasizes local foods, whatever's grown in the area, and home cooking in response to the American fast food coming into Italy. And a more extreme response we saw a few years ago in France, where I believe farmers dumped a load of manure in front of a McDonald's, blocking the door.
Yeah.
A bit more of a statement. but we've seen these reactions, you know, from Europe, which they have very well-established cultures. And if you think, you know, what, if you really want to boil it down, what's central to a culture? It's its food. And what are the two sort of ambassadors of American cultural hegemony? They're Coca-Cola and McDonald's. And so it's interesting to me that we see these resistance pockets growing up around the issue of food. I think it's like a canary in a coal mine.
Okay. Now, I actually have a slightly different answer than everyone on this topic. And I think the answer is that it both increases and decreases cultural diversity. I think all of the places you see examples of one culture dominating another culture, but I also think you see a lot of subcultures pop up that wouldn't have in other circumstances. And or at least the ability to address that you belong to a subculture. You know, so I mean, with the connection, we have people to all over the world, all over the country, and all over the world. You kind of realize that you're not the only person who thinks a certain way or has certain feelings about certain things or enjoy certain things. And you see people connecting all over the world in these new tight-knit communities like ours. And I believe Dreadfish had another comment on what Orbit had to say.
Yes. What Orbit said reminded me of some things I've experienced, too, about in this case, Western culture in general, specifically like America and the UK, taking over native cultures in other parts of the world. I've spent some time in Malaysia, and from my personal experience, it seems like a lot of countries, because of the way they perceive the West, want to be more like the West. And it makes me sad because there are a lot of cultures that are losing their culture because they're adopting Western ideas and values, and oftentimes they're doing it voluntarily. And they think it's great, they want to be like that, and it makes me sad because we're losing all this diversity. And I think, you know, no, the West isn't really that amazing, it's just the West, you know, it's just different. But in the case of Malaysia, because they were once a colony of the UK, they're very Western there, actually. So it's, yeah.
We're actually going to talk more on his time over there on Thursday's episode, so look forward to that. That should be a lot of fun, and I have quite a few questions about his stay over there. I actually had a reaction to that, and it's completely gone already. Oh, right. I guess you brought up the idea. You said you made it sad, and I guess I'm probably going to be the odd man out on this next topic, but I guess the loss of cultural diversity doesn't really bother me. I don't think if that's your worst complaint about something, then there's really nothing wrong. Now, that being said, I'm also all for preserving cultural diversity when and if possible, and I have no issue with that. And when I say that I'm okay with the loss of diversity, does it mean forceful loss of cultural diversity? If it happens, it happens, and that doesn't particularly bother me. The fact that you live differently and now we live more similar doesn't really seem that big of an issue. And I imagine that while certain aspects of cultures will disappear, you'll still see distinct differences within from here as you would in somewhere else. I mean, even the culture differences between the next state over can be significantly different in a country, let alone jumping world. So I imagine that while you see these other places taking on more and more Western cultural traits, they're still distinctly making it their own and combining it with things that are distinct to their culture. So it's not really a loss, but more of an evolution. And if you do see one culture dominate the rest, I'm not necessarily sure if that's the worst thing. Especially if we can lead us to working together more and managing our resources more. So, GSA, what do you think about the loss of diversity? Do you think that's an inherently bad thing, good thing, neutral? How do you feel about it?
I think that it can be very good. I think that it can be neutral, and I think it can be a negative, although, you know, loss of cultural diversity standing alone, I'm not terribly concerned about. And that does probably make me a little out of place there, too, with respect to the other two answers. What I'll say is that things like female genital mutilation are a form of cultural diversity, right? I mean, there are cultural practices that are inconsistent with, I think, a fairly consistent human rights norm that's developed at the international level. It lacks an enforcement mechanism, but we can talk about that later when we talk about governance. But to me, there are plenty of cultural practices that are not commendable. And one thing that globalization has allowed for are global social justice movements that are aimed at curtailing those practices and highlighting them and demonstrating how unfair they are. You know, women in many ways have benefited from the changes in the economy in the last 50, 60 years. There are a number of examples that we can point to where, I mean, there may have been a change in culture, but it was a change that benefited human rights and human flourishing. So I'm wary of cultural diversity and the maintenance of culture being any kind of absolute gold standard, because, you know, you could have said the same thing about horrific cultural practices that were in place in the West for long periods of time. Slavery, you know, imprisonment for debt. I mean, we had a number of practices. Another one that comes to mind are things like the equivalent of honor killings. You know, there are a lot of customs that I don't think we view as a positive. And so one thing that we should always keep in mind when it comes to globalization and to the erosion of cultural practices are the ways in which, you know, people who are defending some of these practices will often point to cultural diversity. And it's one of the reasons why UN declarations on cultural diversity often contain this qualifier that says cultural diversity is no excuse for not maintaining, you know, the Universal Declaration of Human Rights. So that's kind of my thought on it. And I think that we should preserve neutral and positive aspects of culture to the extent that we can. But, you know, cultures aren't people. And I mean, you know, people, humans have rights, and cultures change quite a bit over time.
Okay. Now, Orbit, did you have a reaction to any of that?
Sure. When I think of cultural diversity, I'm not thinking about things like human rights, which obviously I think are important. I'm thinking about what makes a culture unique. It's food, it's customs, it's songs, it's architecture, those kinds of things. When it comes to human rights, I would be in agreement with GSA and would say that that is one case where I would support an international standard. So I'm absolutely in agreement with the point about human rights.
Well, I have a question for you since you brought that up. Are there particular examples of diversity lost in some of those other areas? Like, especially we'll go with, like, food and art and stuff. Like, I know you mentioned, like, describing McDonald's as, like, a, you know, where I brought it up, and then you responded to that and kind of pointed out to the counter movements of those in some European countries. But just because you see McDonald's spreading in the area doesn't mean that the local food has gone anywhere. It's still there. You can still get it. That experience hasn't gone anywhere. They just it's a new experience. So how do you see that happening?
Let me bring this down to the personal level. I was in Barcelona, and I was at the Sagrada Familia, the famous cathedral by Antonio Gaudi. And that's like a very Spanish place to be. It's very Spain. You're at this amazing piece of architecture that is completely Spain. And then what is at the foot of the cathedral? Literally, KFC, McDonald's, and Burger King. It was jarring. It was just wrong.
I don't see why. I mean, you still have that cultural experience that I don't see how that's ruined it.
But wouldn't it be so much better to have a couple of Spanish tapas bars, you know, and just things that belong to Spain in at that very important cultural site? Wouldn't it make more sense to have culture that reflects Spain and not multinational American corporations?
I'll put it this way. I'd be happy to not see McDonald's anywhere. So if you want to argue against seeing, you know, Spanish topless bars, of course I'm in favor of that. That sounds fantastic. But I think we have a song we wanted to play for
Okay.
Again, this was submitted by someone who wants to remain anonymous. So known only as Track 1. Track 1.
Prosperity. Sorry now. Not how wanted it to be. All that he could see was individuality. Sorry now, not what he wanted.
Welcome back to Radio RF. Again, that was track one, submitted by Anonymous. And you could have your track, Axie's name be said, and your name be mentioned if you submit to me music. Now, how did the song sound to you guys today? I forgot to pay attention when I was uploading the song to which percentage it was playing at, and it sounded a little bit rough on my phone. How did it sound when you guys listened to the song? Again, I forgot, but I can actually set the volume level lower, so I might have to try that next time if there's an issue. So let me know. And you can let me know by calling 646-200-4733, or you can comment underneath the episode. You can send me a PM. You can talk to me in chat. And you can also comment on our on the forum, on our thread. So, again, if you're just tuning in now, tonight's episode has been about globalization, global governance, and both their impacts on cultural diversity and the importance of cultural diversity. And we've covered globalization and its impacts on cultural diversity and the importance of cultural diversity so far. And we're about to move on to global governance. And, again, I warned everyone before that we're not particularly talking about the conspiracy theory, Illuminati type of fear-mongering thing. So, I mean, that is something to have to worry about when we talk about these topics and acknowledge that. But again, what we mean, I think most people who are in pro of it are talking about something more similar to how America is run with the Constitution and state rights and stuff. At least that's where I'm coming from. And I think I'm pro-global governance and, there's a couple of major reasons why. I mean, I think, one, there's certain issues we're never going to fix that need to be addressed as a planet. And one of the biggest ones is global warming or global climate change, to be more accurate. I mean, it's a big deal, and we need to do something about it, well, 10 years ago, to be honest, if not even earlier than that. I mean, it's kind of a little too late to really stop it, but, I mean, we really need to act in complete unison and harmony in ways that are just simply not possible as bickering nation states. I also feel that issues like poverty, starvation, and human rights will be something, an issue more easy to solve under some form of global governance, as well as the resource management of this planet. I mean, right now people literally can't get, we can turn seawater into drinking water but we don't, because it's too expensive, and we don't have the political will to go and do that. And that should be something that I feel would be easier to address when there was more connected in our global system. And I'll talk about this hopefully in another episode. I think space exploration and colonization are literally of the utmost importance to humanity. And I don't necessarily think, I think global governance will make that easier and better. So, and again, like I said, when I talk about global governance, I mean something democratic, something that protects human rights, and not necessarily something that's, you know, very dictatorship-y or takes away from anything. And I don't want to see, I mean, it might have an impact on cultural diversity, but I don't think it's going to have that big of one. So, Dredd, what do you think?
Like I said earlier, at the bare minimum, I would imagine the highest form of global governance focusing solely or for the very most part on resource management of the world's resources. And that includes, like you're talking about, trying to temper the global temperature change, that sort of thing, and also on human rights. Currently, I mean, we technically have some form of global governance with the United Nations. It doesn't always do a very good job, but it is there. So we are moving in that direction. I think that it is inevitable, and I do think it could do a lot of good. However, I would stress that I think that it should only focus on some very broad aspects and not so much on actually governing individual people, but things that affect the entire world at the top level. So, you know, management of resources and human rights. That's, you know, that's mostly what I could attribute to that highest level of global governance.
Now, I mentioned science. Do you disagree that science and space colonization should be on that list, or do you think that should be addressed lower on the list?
That makes sense on the highest level, actually. Whenever you mentioned that, I was thinking of the International Space Station. I mean, you know, even now with political tensions between Russia and the U.S., we have astronauts from both countries working together, and they're just fine with each other, you know, and we're, you know, they're working towards a common goal. And obviously, since space exploration is it's sort of a thing that we're going to be doing as people of Earth, it makes sense to include that as part of that. So, yeah, that's a good idea.
Okay, cool. Now, a GSA. Do you have any reactions to Dreadfish's comments, or did you want to address the topic yourself?
Well, yeah, there are just some areas that I think where there are global problems, you need global solutions, and climate change is the clearest example. Actually, global environmental problems generally, but climate change being the more pressing one. I also think that some of these, I mean, clearly it's unfortunate because we've had these human rights norms and standards that have been in existence now since at least the end of the Second World War, and there's really no effective enforcement mechanism. That's another area where I really think that we need to some sort of governance mechanism. The ICC is one. That's proven to be pretty controversial. For me, I think that the problem is going to be that the more global networks are integrated, and by that I mean the more you have immigration flows, the more you have information being disseminated across borders, the more you are going to need global institutions to regulate that. That's just, it's very similar in some ways. When you look at a country like the United States that is pretty huge geographically and by population, you can see that part of the reason the federal government has grown is out of necessity. You know, there were increasingly large national problems, and we couldn't rely on state-based solutions for a great number of those problems. And I think that basically the same is ultimately going to happen with global problems. And so, you know, it's going to take a much longer period of time. But I kind of see it in our future. I mean, we've seen most recently when it comes to health issues, for example, that the Ebola crisis was something that required international cooperation and response. We certainly saw it with HIV, and in fact, there was a when I was in Thailand, I interned at the UNAIDS program, which was this kind of unique joint program that they had. And, you know, development issues have always been part of the United Nations framework. I would say that I think that there are probably many more issues that will fall under the global governance label than people suspect. Now, how that happens, it's going to take a long time before the nation state disappears. But, as you know, I think it needs to be through incremental commitments, because there are some issues that are up on the horizon, too. You know, when it comes to climate change, there are, I don't know if you've heard of this, these aerosol spray proposals to reduce the effects of climate change, but these are the kind of things that can be done unilaterally. And
they need to be done unilaterally.
Well, right. I mean, but the issue is that there's going to be a conflict that it will create conflict when that happens. And we really, unfortunately, when it comes to the UN is good for some things, but it's still a relatively weak institution if you're comparing it to national governments, for example. So I'm in favor of working towards stronger global governance. And, you know, it's going to take time, but I think that really is going to have to be the goal, because if we want to sustain, we don't want a race to the bottom. You know, we don't want these regimes coming along that have no environmental protections, have terrible wealth disparities, horrible human rights records, and they end up setting the standard for everybody just because it's the lowest common denominator. So we definitely want to avoid that. And, you know, you need global governance to avoid that just as much as you need it for anything, I think. So that's my position.
Okay, now you kind of already answered a follow-up question that was asked of us in chat on the RF chat room, and that was whether or not it was a good start, and the UN was a good start. And I guess obviously my answer is going to echo your answer, and is it really has no power or authority to enforce anything or to do anything. So I would have to say no. It's mostly just an intersexual nothingness. And if you disagree, please call in the show or comment somewhere and let us know. Maybe even the UN is doing a very good job, and I'd like to hear why. So, again, you can call at 646-200-4733. You can comment in the chat. You can comment underneath the show or on one of our threads. Now, Orbit, what did you think of did you respond to anyone's comments, or did you want to tackle the question yourself?
Actually, I've got a couple of things to say on a bit of a different tack. One is that when you first started talking about this, Itty, you talked about sort of an American federal-type system. But I think we really face some significant challenges. One is that we have to reconceptualize what it means to be governed. What is governance? Under the U.S. model, it's the consent of the governed. But how do you get the consent of the governed from places that don't see eye to eye with you politically? And so I really see that as a challenge. And is the world governance, is it like the UN? Is it U.S.-led? Are we really willing in the U.S. to do serious power sharing with the rest of the world? Can we give up our point of view? I think that is really a challenge. The other issue I wanted to bring up is that as far as climate change goes, the biggest offenders to climate change are corporations. And the problem with multinational corporations is that they are not tethered to the laws of any one country. And in that way, I think a global governance surrounding things that affect the globe, like climate, would be really good. But it's a matter of battling corporations who fund governments to make the decisions that are favorable to them, which is the pattern that we've seen worldwide, which has resulted in pollution and continued reliance on coal and oil and gas instead of solar. So those are the two big challenges I see, challenging corporate power to get any kind of global cooperation for climate change and rethinking what governance means and if the U.S. is really ready to do power sharing.
Okay, well, I mean, I suppose the beginning question is, and GSA tackled this a little bit on how you think we kind of go about to getting to a global point, and instruments. How do you see something that happening? Do you think it's gonna impossible for it to organically get there?
Okay, I don't have a crystal ball or anything, but just going with my gut on this question. I see international trade protocols. I see international climate protocols. I don't see an international political system. So I guess what I'm saying is I see nation states or nation states banding together like the EU into larger entities, but still having that localized political system. I just can't see everybody laying down their ideologies and their cultures and their guns and saying we're all going to be part of the same political system. I just can't see it. But I can see international cooperation.
Okay. I think you're almost using different language to describe the same thing that we're almost all talking about. Like I said before, I like the whole idea of you can basically having everyone as autonomous states outside of the idea of shared resources and, shared human rights and shared environmental protections. And I think not necessarily governance. Again, I think something even Dredd mentioned, he doesn't necessarily want to see, the large thing governing individuals or anything, but, I mean, large ticket issues that affect the whole planet. I mean, if you look at even the way the testing is set up, I would agree that the federal government kind of has a little bit too much power right now, but the way our system was designed was for the states to be mostly doing their own thing, making their own laws, living their own way, and then the U.S. is kind of just to enforce certain things for human rights, the Constitution, and protection, and I kind of feel that's how it should be. So, I mean, I don't necessarily think we'd have to ever fully give up autonomy. Does that make any sense?
It is, but that's where we ran into trouble in the United States with the civil rights movement and with integration and all of that was that the states decided they didn't want to implement federal law. And without a strong federal government, you can't force the implementation. So I still think a strong central authority is needed when local bodies are not acting in the interests of human rights.
Okay. I just wanted to end the show in a minute. I had one last thought on that particular topic, and that was, personally, I don't see the change happening soon. I imagine there's some sort of global agreement, but I imagine that current societies will collapse and then a new one will form and it'll be much more globular than we are now politically. And that's just what I think. So, I think it's going to happen inevitably. Most of the vision fall, and if we don't get more connected between each other, we're going to face that. So I'm going to bring Dredd back on, and we're going to talk about Thursday's episode. Before you do that, I'd like to hear Dredd's final thoughts on tonight's episode.
I also think that something like this would take time to implement. We're talking about the largest scale that really affects us as humans that we're aware of. And so if governance were implemented very quickly, it would be pretty rough, I think. And I also don't see enough interest in making that happen right now. So I do think it is an inevitability. We're gradually becoming more and more international. But I do think that it'll happen slowly, over the next three generations, maybe.
Personally, I hope it happens by people agreeing to it, because I feel if everyone kind of decides to opt in, it'll be a system much more beneficial to the individuals and everyone who opted in than one that happened in another way. GSA, did you have any closing thoughts on tonight's episode? Quick 30 seconds, any ideas?
Sorry, what was that? What was that?
Do you have any, like, a 30-minute or 30-second closing remarks?
Well, no, just thanks for having me on. I guess in closing, you know, with last remarks on global governance, I don't expect that to happen organically without significant pressure. And unfortunately, I think it will probably take an environmental catastrophe to do that, which I also think is unfortunately around the corner. So on that bright note, thanks. It was great.
Thank you. All right. Orbit, last minute closing thoughts.
Thank you so much for having me on. This was a really great conversation. Got a lot of food for thought, and I'd like to thank everybody.
Yes, thank you again. And we have another episode in the works at Orbit, so you'll be hearing from her again. And for sure, see, we have some ideas worked out. And we wanted to thank her for all that she's done for Radio RF. So thank you, Orbit. Now I'm going to mention... we have an episode planned with just Dredd and I next week, or Thursday. So it'll be just Dredd and I, and we'll be talking. Well, we're going to talk about, I just quit smoking, so I'll talk about that. We're going to talk more about Dredd's trip to Malaysia. And then we were thinking, you guys could submit a topic. And, you know, how about you, Orbit, GSA? Real quick, do you guys have a topic you want to talk about next or on Thursday?
You mean a topic for a discussion like this?
No, just something for Dredd, you want to hear Dredd and I talk about.
You know what I'd love to hear you guys talk about? Seriously?
What?
Feminism.
That's a good idea.
Yeah?
Seriously, yeah, mm-hmm. I would. I would love to hear that.
How so? Like, which angle?
Any angle, all angles. Your take on it as dudes. What's your take on it? And then maybe open up the phones and let the ladies call you.
Okay.
Sounds like a good idea.
Sounds good. I would love to address that. So that sounds like good. You said feminism.
All
right,
there
right?
We go.
I'm a feminist, so that should be fun. Actually, we should do a full episode on that. You might want to do a full episode on that topic.
I think it would be great.
What do you think? For a half an episode, what would you want to hear about? Okay, I don't think he's here anymore. We also have an episode.
Sorry.
What do you want to hear talk about for like a half an episode?
For a half episode?
Yeah.
I think you should talk about events in the Middle East and tie it into your religion.
All of these involved topics. All right, thank you, Orbit and GSA. If anyone else has any suggestions, please let us know in our thread or underneath the episode or comment to us personally. We also have an episode on the 16th in which we are going to be discussing Zoroastrianism with Shaz, I forget how he changed his name to right now, Mazadin or something like that, and Rival will be calling in with us, and we'll be discussing their religion, and I look forward to that. I know practically nothing about their faith, so that I plan on learning a lot. Dredd, say goodbye to everyone.
Goodbye to everyone.
Good night, good morning, good afternoon.
Good now.